Northeast Archives of Folklore and Oral History, accession number 2196, tape number C773.
February 1990, and this is tape number 3 with Mr. Frank Niedermeyer at his home in Yucaipa, California.
Okay, now you were...
The ship left Honolulu for the island of Kauai. We didn't know what to do there. It was an 8-hour trip from Oahu to the island of Kauai. The place's name is Lihiu, and there was a sugar plantation and a sugar refinery there. They refined raw sugar, or cane sugar. And while it was loaded, I took an afternoon off, walked around the beautiful lagoon. That's the first time I've seen a beautiful coconut lagoon. What amazed me, the coconut was laying on the ground about 3 feet deep. I was wondering, why don't they pick coconuts? Nobody picked coconuts there. There was nobody around there anyway. And took a walk there up the little hill. And I met a little Philippine boy. He told me it's from the Philippine Islands. And it's the first hibiscus flower I've seen growing in the wild. And this little boy told me there's a little town up there. He took me up there, showed me around. And as I was passing there, there was a little freight train, a small one, freight train, loaded with cane, passing by there. And it was all, the whole area was nothing but cane sugar plantation. And I've seen pictures now of it. My sisters went to visit there on the island trip. It's big hotels on the same location now. I wouldn't know the areas anymore. Can you stop? After the ship was loaded with the cane sugar, we left the island and headed for San Francisco. San Francisco has a C&H sugar factory in Crockett, across from underneath a big bridge going across the bay. Forget that town, across the street, forget that town's name.
Yeah, I know it too, but I know where
Martinez, yeah. And first time we got ashore on the mainland, the little town Martinez. So almost the whole crew departed from the ship. First time we stopped at a beer saloon and drank beer. I was sitting with my second cook at one end of the bar, and the other end of the bar was a third officer of the tech officer. He mentioned the remark, should I buy the chief cook a beer? I said, no, you better not. I don't want your beer. I had enough beer myself. He said, come on outside. And he was looking for a fight. He had it in for me, see. Because during the trip, he used to, if the captain liked sauerkraut to cook, and they made fun of me, I cook sauerkraut. He was Irish, of course, from Boston. He didn't care for sauerkraut. So he made remarks when he passed the galley after meals. And another thing he had in for me, asking for seconds. Certain dinners for seconds, which we couldn't do. Seconds wasn't encountered in the total menu. And they started to fight with me. And would you behold, he was 6 foot tall, and I'm 5 foot three. And I remember wrestling tricks that I learned when I was 16 years old in the gymnastic club I belonged to, like weightlifting, I learned there too. A story later on, was weightlifting. We mentioned about weightlifting.
Yeah.
So, would you believe I have stretched out on the sidewalk, drizzle wet sidewalk, in his fancy officer's uniform. And I had my hands on his neck. I couldn't choke there. And the second cook come running and said, "Boy, let him loose, let him loose." I know you're ahead of you licked him. Let him loose. So I took off and walked back to the ship. When he come back to the ship, he first he was looking for my forecastle, my room. And I had it locked. And there was a police, a security guard was there. He said, "You better leave him alone. Don't cause any disturbance." And that was it for that day. And then the ship moved to Richfield. First it was Crockett and then Alameda Air Naval Station, and then to Richmond. And in Richmond we got paid off. And then as we got paid off, the baker told me he got into a fight with the baker. The baker told me he got into a fight with the third mate. The third mate had a black eye.
So he fought with two different cooks and got himself in big trouble.
The baker beat him up, see? And he had a black eye. He was ashamed. And the captain heard all about it, too, see? And I believe the captain wrote that in the Lark book, that there was battles going on, see? Everybody was talking about it. And the, with the black eye, he had to go travel all the way back to Boston on the on the express train. Of course, I got mail. I received a letter from my wife from New York City, and it says, "We have a son was born." I was surprised to me, see, but this was 8 months ago, on the way. We was going 8 months when we left Brooklyn. And at that same time, the captain come down, talk to me. "I want you to make another trip with me." Captain Stubbing liked me, really liked me cooking, all that. Even some other guys didn't like the sauerkraut or whatever. You know, can't please everybody anyway. There's no such thing as pleasing everybody. But everybody else was satisfied with my cooking. So then of course, the captain asked me, "Would you say, make another trip with me?" Yeah. I said, "Sorry, Captain. I just had a letter that a son was born, a new son was born. Son number two, actually. I want to go back to New York and see what my son looks like." Yeah? So then I left there. At that time, I sent a telegram to my best friend I ever had, Arthur Burt, who was living in Whittier, California. And I got an answer back the next day from Los Angeles. "Come and see me. I'll be waiting at the station, at the railroad station, 8 o'clock a.m. the next day." This was the milk train. It's so-called milk train from San Francisco to Los Angeles. Sure enough, 8 o'clock in the morning, my friend waited for me to get off the train. Was I happy? Was he happy to see me? It was several years since, past since. And I told him, I take the railroad ticket to New York via Los Angeles. And then Los Angeles, go back to New York. Turn the ticket back in. I'm going to drive it to New York. I thought this was impossible with gasoline rationing going on. Needed the A stamp to buy gasoline. Don't worry, Frank. I got your telegram sent to me from Whittier, and that sends it to me in Los Angeles to ensure that I get it. There must be something important. So they took me down to the railroad station, and told me to go get cash for the railroad ticket. We got $125 paid through a union agreement, $125 if you land in another port that you shipped out of. Like we sailed from Brooklyn and we landed in San Francisco. So $125 I could use. So my best friend had a gasoline station, and he owned the three stores in St. Peter Street and half a block on 76 in St. Peter Street. And I was curious, how come you got a gas station now? His wife was running the gas station, actually. Ruth, his wife was running the gas station. And he said, you can stay with me for the time being. And then I take a drive to New York. And I see that getting off gasoline step from the station. And he was advertising, I didn't know that right away, he was advertising transportation to the East Coast. So he picked up three passengers. One was a couple going to Houston, intention to go to work at the Houston shipyard. And another passenger was a discharged Air Force pilot. He had his face scarred from burns. I don't know, was he shot down or what, something like that. So he was quiet, you know. He wanted to travel with a small group. He didn't want to go on a train or fly because of the way he looked in his face, all scarred. He went to Guthrie in Texas. That's where we dropped him off. And my friend, he had in this backyard in Woody, he had a gasoline tank that he was going to put in his trunk. He put it into his trunk as an extra gasoline tank. And then he fixed up the trailer. He had a trailer on the yard, gasoline station yard. He had an old-fashioned trailer laying there, big wheels on it. So he fixed the trailer up, and we put all the suitcases on there, and he put 85 gallons of gasoline in the trailer. But the trailer was packed with our suitcases, and besides about all the many cans of gasoline. So we got as far, we left over in the evening, so we're driving all night long. 12 o'clock at night, we arrived somewhere in the area of Blight. And all of a sudden, the trailer had a flat tire. What are we going to do now? We said, well, we unhooked the trailer, and this shipyard worker and I said, you wait here, while the others stayed in the car. Yeah. We were driving to Blight to find an all-night gasoline station for mechanics. So we got the tire fixed, put the spare tire back on there. And we was freezing. It was 12 o'clock at night, at the beginning of April. It was the beginning of April, 1943. And we was freezing also. He remembered, wait a minute, I got a bottle of whiskey in the trunk and on the trailer. So he went to get this bottle of booze when we warmed up with our hooch. We warmed up, kept us warm. An hour later, he came back. It was cold that night out in the desert. And we didn't know where we were, so everything pitch dark, you know, out of nowhere. And then they came back, all fixed, we took off. The next morning, we arrived in a town called Douglas, Arizona. So, well, let's have breakfast. We stopped off at this restaurant and have breakfast. Ham and eggs, breakfast. Oh, we get hungry. We're glad to get a since first stop, actually stop, since we left Los Angeles. And after breakfast, we went outside with the man snooping around our trailer. We didn't know he was a sheriff. There are no uniform sheriffs there, just civilian clothes sheriffs. So, and then I was informed at the sheriff station, a little shack across the street, there was a sheriff station, right across the street. So this sheriff seeing gasoline dripping out of the trailer, says, "What is this? What's going on here? You're hauling gasoline across border? From where are you from? California? You're hauling gasoline across the border?" Took it over the sheriff station, and we didn't know what was going on. He didn't tell us that we were under arrest or anything like that. Of course, I was in uniform. He said, how come you're in the Merchant Marine and you go traveling back to New York? I said, sorry, all I know that I shipped out of Brooklyn and our ship had a load of food on it to go to New Caledonia, and because the train transportation takes too long across the Arizona desert. Oh, yeah, is that so? Yeah. I was better off shipping it right on to the Panama Canal. I said, that's all I can tell you. Oh, that the Merchant Marine is a secret service. So another sheriff come around, and he said, how do I know you're a sheriff? What do you get to prove to you're a sheriff? He pulled out an old dilapidated pushcart. A pushcart, that was his affidavit to he could show me. He said, all right. Then I saw my identification, see, my Coast Guard pass. See? And he said, well, I had no idea why they're keeping it out there. They wouldn't let us drive on. All the way in the afternoon. I said, let's go down to the courthouse. There's a little bitty courthouse down there. See, that's an identification all over again. All over again. They called the draft the rationing board. The state of Arizona, the whole rationing board of Arizona, they called together. That's why they kept us waiting there. We didn't know that at the beginning. And the state attorney of Arizona, the draft, draft board or rationing board. I thought I was confused with the draft board. The rationing board, and one was a barber, belonged to the rationing board. And, well, the only thing we can do, you fellas travel across the country to get our gasoline, and we here in Arizona, we haven't got a drop of gasoline. They was completely dry. That's what they told us, they had no gasoline whatsoever. So, well, stop off at the Standard Oil Depot, outside the town was the Standard Oil Depot, and we unloaded all the gasoline there. And my friend kept saying, don't worry, Washington's going to hear about this. We're going to get it all back again. I'm going to get the gasoline back. He was out of luck. He never did nothing in Washington. He never got gasoline or money back for that. And would you believe, as soon as we crossed the state of New Mexico, their state police was waiting for us too. Just escorted us across the border, but they just watched us. Like goodbye, good riddance. We arrived in Baltimore. First, we arrived in Baltimore. From Baltimore to New York, the trailer fell apart. We're traveling up and down, going to West Virginia, and the place called Emstal, and all the way to Baltimore. I've been in Baltimore before in a singing contest early in this, in 1936, something like that. And I knew Baltimore. And then we arrived in New York City, and there was a snowstorm. To our surprise, there was 10 inches of snow in New York City. There was a late snowstorm. And of course, I greeted my wife and looked at the new baby, and we talked about what the baby's name going to be. I said, oh, my friend said, name him Arthur after me. He said, no, I don't want him named Arthur. I want him named Robert. That he was named Robert. That stuck with it. And then my friend got the trailer fixed, nice shop, all new woodwork around on the bed, trailer bed, all new lumber. It fixed up good, cost me quite a bit of money. And then we said, what furniture are we going to load? What we could take along in a trailer, and what most of it would have to be shipped out to Los Angeles by a joint railroad car. So we called the moving company and that to care of all that, prices on the railroad car. And my friend kept saying, well, you have to take the furniture with me because you can't buy no furniture in California. I didn't believe that. But it was actually a fact. You couldn't buy no furniture. You couldn't buy an apartment either. Yeah. So because I had to move into one of his empty stores. And while we were living in this April the 13th, 1943, we arrived. I got pictures to show. I showed you the picture. The car was dirty because there was a snowstorm when we left New York City. And that same snowstorm followed us going west all the way to Little Rock, Arkansas. We had a snowstorm following us for 3 days. We stopped off. The baby was 6 weeks old. And the first stop was in...
How old was the older one?
Oh, he was 6 years old already, the older one. And he got tired in the car one time. He put him out, all right, you got to walk to California. My friend told him to behave. Then we let him walk for a quarter mile. That, are you tired of walking? You know, all right, come back in the car. Behave. And then Francis Jr. And Pittsburgh, the blizzard was so big on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. Every once in a while, the car skidded. The car was skidding. That's how bad icy the conditions was on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. The first stop was Pittsburgh, and we stopped in the diner to warm up the milk bottle for the baby, and we had breakfast there. The next stop was Cincinnati. Outside of Cincinnati, a private home had rooms for rent. We stayed overnight in a nice old-fashioned mansion outside Cincinnati. And then the next stop, we kept going, Breckenridge, Kentucky. Man said, well, you can just stay overnight there in the gasoline station parking lot. And I got a trailer. You got a trailer, you can sleep in the trailer. We did. This is my first time in my life that I spent the night in the trailer. You know, we like that for a change. And it was the town that had German prisoners there, I was told. Breckenridge, Kentucky. And then Oklahoma City. We stayed coming and going at the St. Patrick's Hotel. I had a customer Masonic Temple, Oklahoma City. And going east, I had put my long johns on. And of course, I didn't wear any long johns from New Caledonia, where it was summer and winter. And I got so itchy, I had to take it off. I couldn't stand it. It could stand the wool. The change of climate. And going west, we stopped in the same hotel, St. Patrick's Hotel again. And I was wondering, why we stay there 2 days? My friend said he couldn't pick up passengers. Go to California. I don't know where he picked them up. Some place. I don't know where. Because my friend has crossed the country so many times, he got experience, all those connections, how to get passengers. And we picked up two ladies. They said he was going to Pasadena. And here we are, left in the evening, on the way to Oklahoma. It was a long, straight road. Oh, God, you hold off, pretty speedy. All of us, we were singing in the car already. Those two ladies started singing. My wife was happy, always everybody started, California, here I come, right back where I started from. My friends shipped in too. All of a sudden, we were jackknifed, a trailer jackknifed. All of a sudden, there was a curve in the road. After a long stretch of road, all of a sudden, there was a curve in the road. And the jackknife trailer pushed us off the road, and we landed the car on top of a rock wall. There's a house, and they had so many accidents in that corner. They built a rock wall to protect themselves. We lay on top of the rock wall. And our 1941 Hudson was a new car. The front bumper was knocked off. So what are you going to do now? Well, again, 12 o'clock at night, 11 to 12 o'clock at night, we stopped off in the restaurant after the... He found a weld shop working at night to fix the bumper back on the car. Imagine that. It was lucky. Then we took off, stopped off for a cup of coffee when we take off in that small town. Must have been about 60, 70 miles outside Oklahoma City. Next up was Little Rock, Arkansas. We stopped off in the motel. We couldn't drive too many hours in the day because on account of the baby. Baby had to heat up the milk bottles or formula bottle, whatever. And then we got to... I was doing the driving.
Yeah, you had plenty of experience. You had your first car back in 30,
wasn't it? Coming near the Mojave Desert. In California, I got kind of dreary. My eyes got burning, so I stopped. And I got out of the car and looked at some. Oh my! Sunglasses were thick with dust. So driving with open windows, my eyes were so dust. That's the only trouble that was. After that, I felt better. My eyesight returned again. And the two ladies, those passengers we gave in Oklahoma City, they argued. They didn't want my friend that owned the car to let him drive. He said, no, we don't want you to drive anymore. We had an accident already. They kept on course. That made him mad, see? Because he owned the car and he was the driver. See? I argued with them, see. And as soon as we arrived in East Los Angeles, they broke the biggest argument out again. I told my friend, well, here we're in Los Angeles, take over the wheel. You know Los Angeles area. This was East LA somewhere. I was like, all right, my friend got out of the car. He went to the gasoline station. I didn't know what was going on. So my wife and I, with the baby, we sat in the car. And we have no idea what the idea is, what's going on. He called the police. He called the police. The police, the sheriff's department. Sheriff's department came. And one of the ladies took the key out of the car. Wouldn't let him have the key to the car. After they told me he was going to drive near L.A. I remember driving through Redlands and all that myself. So. And the police came, gave the key back to that man, otherwise you're charged with stealing the car. Oh, we want to go to Los Angeles. We're not in Los Angeles yet. I said, lady, you want to go to Pasadena? You're in Los Angeles right now. Get out of the car. Get the key back to that man, otherwise we arrest you. So, oh, we have to go to Pasadena. Police took him to Pasadena. Police come right there. Oh, we have to get close to Pasadena. Let me take it there. That was the end of that. And then we arrived in the morning, somewhere around noontime. The 76 and San Pedro Street, their home, the old-fashioned house home, and a picture took right there on my arrival. And we seen the snow all the way down to Altadena. All San Gabriel Mountain was in snow.